Now to talk about a new survey that is just being released. In fact, the date on the release is yesterday, and so we are among the first to talk about it and hear about it. It's a survey about cannabis and how Napa County voters feel about the topic, and we're going to get into it in detail right now with two guests. Eric Sklar, who's been with us a number of times, the Napa Valley Cannabis Association. Eric, welcome back.
Great. Good to see you, Barry.
And we also have Alicia Rose joining us from Herba Buena.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. Before we get into it, what is Herba Buena?
It's a cannabis company that we founded in 2015.
Mm-hmm. Very good. So, Eric, set this up for us. Your organization, Napa Valley Cannabis Association, funded this poll. What's the headline? What's the lead?
The headline is that, not surprisingly, Napa Valley voters, and this is a poll of voters, not just the public at large, overwhelmingly support cannabis activities in Napa Valley. We know they supported Prop 64 2 years ago by a margin that was larger than the state margin. And today they would support Prop 64 again by an even larger margin than they did 2 years ago. So what we're asking is for the Board of Supervisors to allow cannabis businesses in the county, particularly cultivation, which is a natural thing to do in the ag preserve. It's another crop, which would be a good thing. It's a high-value crop, which is also a good thing. And so we're asking the Board of Supervisors to do their job rather than require that the voters do this again, because it's always better when legislation comes from the legislators.
Mm-hmm. Alicia, what have you taken from the survey?
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that Napa has great support for cannabis and cannabis business. The survey reinforced a lot of things that we already know from operating in this area for 4 years now. And people are looking for ways to bring cannabis to our community in a legal and safe way.
Mm-hmm. Who's your typical customer?
For me, I started left essentially the wine industry because I saw a real need within the cannabis industry to bring about a new culture that is similar to what we expect in our organic food and fine wine. So at the time when cannabis was still under the medical propositions, it was very difficult to find, a sophisticated product, good information, and products, frankly, that I would want to use in my daily life. And so the whole purpose of Herba Buena has been to bring the same sophistication, purity, and quality to cannabis as we find at the fine wineries here in Napa.
So where does the product come from? Where is it grown?
Well, we can't grow it in Napa, so we grow it generally in Mendocino is where most of my farmers are at the moment. We specialize in certified biodynamic cannabis, which is sort of like organic exponentially squared. It's some of the most pure food and medicine that you can find anywhere. And certainly Sonoma and Mendocino have been leaders in that practice.
Mm-hmm. And Barry, we hear from our friends up in Mendocino. They grow great cannabis. They've been doing it for a while. They say they want to be the Napa of cannabis. Well, Napa should be the Napa of cannabis. We shouldn't let somebody steal that title. Mm. We are some of the best farmers in the world. We know how to grow really fine products that require real close hand tending. And so we should be the Napa of cannabis and not let anybody take that title from us.
Yeah, you kind of anticipated my question. I was leading up to, if you can grow the product other places, why does it matter if we grow it here or not? So is it about branding more than anything to you?
Not just branding, no. It's about the soil and the climate we have here. I actually believe, in fact, that Lake County and Napa County may be the two best places in California, and California is one of the best places in the country, in the world, to grow cannabis. We have the perfect weather for it, the perfect climate, the perfect soil. We just haven't been doing it because we've had another good crop, and it's hard to grow things illegally here. We're a small valley that's pretty exposed, unlike some of the places up north where you've got big redwoods to hide among. But I think we can grow the best cannabis, and if we can, we ought to try. And we're not talking about replacing grapevines. Nobody's going to tear out a Cabernet vine for cannabis. That wouldn't make any sense. And in fact, cannabis gardens shouldn't be near vineyards directly because vineyards still spray, and we can't have those sprays wafting on to our cannabis. So we're going to grow in the outer parts of the county where there's still great climate and great soil. These industries can coexist and actually complement each other, we think, very well.
Mm-hmm. I guess, the crux of this, and it's clear from your approach to this and taking this poll, that you're trying to apply some pressure to the Board of Supervisors to take action. What is stopping them from taking action up to this point? It's been a couple of years, right? That's the main question here.
Yeah, you know, there's five supervisors, so there's probably five different answers. Each of them has their own reasons. I hear what they say. I think there's just some risk aversion. They just don't want to try something new, is what I think is the kind of the averaging of the five different opinions. Mm-hmm. But in the end, there's three who are willing to do something. They want to do it carefully. There's two who've been less willing. So this, you're right. This is an attempt to show them that the voters want to do this. And if they don't want to do it, then we'll have to take it to the voters. And we'd much rather not do that.
Mm-hmm.
There's been, a misinformed sentiment across people's sort of disinterest in moving forward with cannabis business in general, and that ultimately came from a lot of the black market grows that we heard about for years and years, saying that, you know, they create environmental contamination, the chemicals that we use on cannabis gardens get into the water and the soil. And in fact, with a black market grow, that is true when we're not regulating. When we are regulating, the cannabis industry is regulated to higher standards than any other agricultural product in the country, and in fact is tested to parts per billion for every single type of contaminant, pesticide, herbicide that you can think of. And in fact, there was an article not so long ago that came out in a newspaper in California that somebody had taken an organic apple from a grocery store and brought it in for testing at our cannabis labs, and it failed miserably. So the standards that we're held to as an industry will absolutely prevent and preclude any additional environmental issues, and perhaps may actually be influential in helping us clean some things up here.
Hmm. Interesting. Eric, would you revisit for folks the basic numbers in this poll? Numbers are hard on radio. We kind of need to repeat them a little bit. So in a nutshell, you're showing that support for, let's just say, cannabis in general, the availability of it and the ability to grow it, is higher today in Napa than it was when we voted on Prop 64.
Right. So there's two numbers that are relevant. One is that we asked generally, how do you feel about legalization of cannabis among Napa voters? And that was 70%. You don't get 70% for anything these days,
yeah.
Right? And then we also asked people how they would vote today if Prop 64 was on the ballot. And it also came in at about 68%. And that's 7 points higher than the actual vote in 2016. So support has gone up by at least 7%, maybe 8% or 9% since 2016 for the general idea of legalizing cannabis. Then we specifically asked how people felt about cannabis businesses in Napa County. And that number was 64%, also a very high number, higher than the Prop 64 vote was for just the general idea of legalizing it in 2016. That's really overwhelming support by any measure. We believe that if we put it on the ballot in 2020 to allow cannabis cultivation in Napa County in the ag areas, that it would win overwhelmingly. There doesn't seem to be much opposition out there. You know, there's a lot of stakeholder groups that get very involved in ballot initiatives, the Napa Valley Vintners, the Farm Bureau, and so on. And they all seem to feel like this really is not their issue or a big issue as long as we comply with all the other rules for environmental protection, conservation, viewshed protection, and so on, that they've had to live with and that they believe in, as we do as well. We think that a ballot initiative that's well-crafted, and we're working on that now, will pass overwhelmingly. Again, we'd rather see the supervisors do this because that involves a public discussion and process that lets you fine-tune things in a really good way that gets broad consensus, and that ends up with a better result. If we put it on the ballot, we're all stuck with that for a long time because nobody's going to put it on the ballot again to change it once it's happened.
And we've seen many, many times how poorly we do in legislating through initiative. It's
correct.
The sloppiest, most difficult way to do things. You emphasized in the opening that this poll is representing voters. This is not a random sampling of just anybody. It's from what I read, it's weighted to ethnic breakout in the county. And you've got an age range, a very broad spectrum of this is a scientific poll, in other words. This is not a self-selecting online poll where people who like to get high can click yes 10 times.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
And that's an important point because the validity of a poll is everything.
Yep. Now, it is interesting, and I know you love this stuff, so I'll talk about it a little bit. This is a unique kind of poll that's been developed in the last 2 or 3 years by a woman who ran for city council down in Palo Alto, I believe, or on the peninsula, who was frustrated that it was too expensive for a local politician politician to do a poll. They can be $40,000 or $50,000 for a poll like this. She went and found a bunch of techies from around Silicon Valley, and they figured out what they could do is do an online poll where people selected it. They only get to select once because they have to put their name, and we match that to the voter file to make sure they actually are a voter and are voting. You do a much bigger sample than you end up with, and then you use algorithms to have that sample randomly pick out people randomly to match the demographics of the voter base in your county. Like you said, it matches age, it matches ethnic background, men and women, because women voted a little higher rate than men, and so on, and also distribution throughout the county. So you end up by a random selection algorithm process with a sample that really matches as closely as you can, much more even than phone polling, which is very slow and very costly.
Yep.
And so those polls keep getting more and more inaccurate over time. Well, this polling style is getting more accurate. You remember the race in Florida recently where Andrew Gilliam, African-American guy, was written off to not win the Democratic nomination. He won it by a big surprise. This polling company nailed it within 0.1% a few days before the election. So their process is really accurate. And we want that because we're not trying to sell something. We want to say that if we do this, it'll pass. Mm-hmm. We don't want to fool ourselves into thinking we can put a ballot initiative on and lose. That would be a waste of time and money.
Sure. So let's talk for a second about the cultivation side. In a previous appearance on the show, we talked in some detail about what cultivation in Napa County might look like. Can you go through that for us? Because I'm sure when people, you know, this springs to your mind and you're picturing, well, if people were growing marijuana in Napa, you know, do you drive up Highway 29 and there's a vineyard and then there's a big pot farm and there's a sign and a tasting room? You know, it's like,
wouldn't that be nice?
Right. Yeah, we think that's a long way off. Tastings are still a while away.
Right. So we need to put some context into it. So what, like you said, you mentioned like fringe areas or more outlying areas where this might be the choice for people, landowners.
So we're putting a lot of restrictions on what you can do. So first of all, you have to have at least a 10-acre parcel, just like to build a winery. You have to have more than 1 acre per parcel. So minimum of 10-acre parcel size and only 1 acre per parcel, which is relatively small. Vineyards, you know, are 20, 30, 100 acres in size. So this really puts it in perspective that it's a tiny part of a vineyard. We're agreeing with the setbacks that say you can't build wineries within 600 feet of 29 and Silverado Trail. We're going to say that same setback for the gardens themselves and the processing building. The gardens have to be screened by state law, which means fencing, but we're asking that that be natural coloring. So if you're in a vineyard, it should be green fencing. If you're up in the hillsides where the grass is brown in the summer, the fencing should have brown canvas or brown slats on it. We're looking to make this a relatively invisible part of the agricultural landscape. We are suggesting that greenhouses are allowed. Again, just an acre of greenhouse on at least a 10-acre parcel and only one greenhouse, but that those greenhouses aren't able to be lit up at night because we think the dark sky protections that are in place and aren't strong enough should be stronger, and we want to lead the way on that.
Yeah, that's significant. That's been a problem in a lot of other counties where greenhouse cultivation is necessary because they live in cooler climates and various other reasons. And to have those lights on within a cultivation method called light deprivation, or light dep as it's known, is providing artificial light to make the plants flower at particular times. And that's not something that we would be allowing or promoting at all. So it would be no additional artificial light, especially when it's, you know, natural darkness.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, we want to make this cannabis that's grown in the sun. So even greenhouses, you know, in the sun are allowed. And we want it to be Napa soil. That's what would allow us to put the Napa name on it. We're saying that you cannot use the Napa name if it's grown indoors. That's just not accurate. It's misleading the public and misleading consumers in a way that we don't think is right. And, you know, both Alicia and I come from the wine business. I'm still a grape grower up in Rutherford. Stephanie Honing, our board of directors chair, is, you know, Honing Winery. They've been growing grapes in this valley for 30 years, her family has. And Robin Davi's on the board. We don't want to affect the Napa name in any negative way. In fact, we believe strongly that we will enhance it by adding another top-line crop that's grown in the ground, in soil, in the sun, in Napa Valley.
By some of the best farmers in the world that we have here in the valley.
Mm-hmm. Some people might be concerned about water consumption. From what I know, which is not a lot, but in most growing operations, the indoors and I'm sure in the black market growing operations, water's always been an issue. Let's talk about that a little.
Yeah, it's a great question. There are, like with any crop, there are a number of different philosophies on how we cultivate it and the amount of water usage that we have. I actually, my first year of growing, I worked with a well-known vintner up in Mendocino, and we actually did a comparison that first and second summer that we cultivated together, comparing how much his Pinot Noir vineyard was being irrigated versus how much our garden was being irrigated. And while the garden needed an intensive amount of water during a very certain period of time toward the end of the season, for the annual amount of water usage, it was significantly less.
Really?
Right. And there are four other little kind of specific points I'd like to make. One is we're only allowing an acre per parcel. So it's not, you know, when you compare it to a 100-acre vineyard, it's going to be even
smaller,
right? Significantly
different scale.
Number one. Number two, the water board you have to get a water board permit to have a cannabis garden. So they're making sure that you're using a legal and safe water source, that you're not impacting other water users nearby, that you're not taking water illegally from a stream, for instance, which happens a lot in the illegal grows.
Right.
Additionally, you know, we're going to test that water really carefully because if it contaminates our plants, we're done for. We also, as an industry, don't use water for processing afterwards for the most part. Certainly flour, pre-rolls, maybe in some forms of extraction use a little bit of water, whereas the wine industry uses between 3 and 10 gallons of water post-harvest to make the wine. So we use less water in the growing of it, and we don't use any water virtually in the post-production side of things. So we really aren't a big water user, and as people sometimes think. An individual plant at its peak in September can suck up a lot of water, but that's for 4 or 5 weeks, and it's only, you know, and it's a small area.
Yeah. You talked to us previously about sort of the economics of this acre, which was mind-boggling to me at the time, and I still tell that story to other people. We talk about an acre of the best Cabernet in Napa Valley, averaging now around 8,000, is that?
Yeah, 8,000 like a ton, yeah.
Yeah, and some 8,000.
I think that's the average, but it's certainly not the high. We'll talk about the high.
I shouldn't say an acre, not 8,000 acre, 8,000 a ton.
Per ton, yeah.
And an acre might produce?
Yeah, 2.5-3 tons for the best.
Okay. And then, you know, at the top end, the Andy Bechstoffer story, the 25,000 a ton and whatnot.
Right, they can get, you can get 50, 60,000 an acre.
I was going to say there are some upwards of 50,000 in that.
So that, you know, think of that as the top earning potential for a prime acre in Napa County, right? And then tell us what an acre of marijuana will yield.
You know, so it really varies by your growing style, and prices are coming down, although they've stabilized quite a bit more than we thought they would in California at around, you know, $1,000 a pound, roughly, a little lower than that for some folks, for $1,000 a pound for cannabis grown outdoors. So you can grow the style that we grow up in Lake County, where we have a garden now, we can grow about 2,000 pounds per acre. Okay, so 2,000 pounds per acre means $2 million for an acre of cannabis versus 55,000, 60,000. Now, that's an extreme. We're doing hand-tended plants that we're growing quite big, but really well. We've got a great style of growing. Take half that. Say that, you know, it's only $1 million an acre, you know, at $500 a pound, which, you know, is what the price seems to be stabilizing at in some of the other states. Every state seems to be different as they've experimented with this because some of them allow a lot of growth and some don't allow much. And so the prices are all over the map depending whether you look at Nevada, Washington, Oregon. But, you know, in California, the price seems to be hovering around 1,000 pounds. We think it'll come down by half that over the next 2 or 3 years as more licensed farmers come online. But still, it's a very valuable crop. And you get a lot of volume off a small area. So, again, we don't need a lot of air to grow here. I don't know what it's going to look like if we pass an ordinance that allows 1 acre per 10-acre parcel or greater. But, you know, I don't think it's going to be more than, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 acres. If it was 100, I'd be really surprised versus 45,000 acres of grapes in Napa County.
And you anticipated my next question. There are only a certain percentage of landowners who would be interested in this and a certain percentage that would have an appropriate parcel for it. And so on and so forth. So it's not as if people are going to be ripping things out, right? It's not a negative impact on the agricultural part of grape growing.
Nor would it be an impact on, say, a cover of trees, a canopy cover. We're suggesting that no mature trees be taken out for cannabis because you don't need to. If you're doing a 100-acre vineyard, it's kind of on a new land. It's hard not to do it without taking out trees or to do it without taking out trees. We're suggesting that no mature trees be taken out for any cannabis. So we're really saying it is people aren't going to even know it's happening here for the most part. The other thing we want to do is it's really important is to protect kids because that's in the poll. That was the biggest concern. It's not a surprise to us. We've heard that over and over. We're both parents. We care about kids not getting cannabis. It's clear that young minds can be damaged by smoking cannabis. You shouldn't be using this product until you're an adult. And the mind is developing still, and it can cause problems. The science is still new and not extensive, but it's just no chance is worth it's not worth taking a chance on that. Mm-hmm. So we're going to say all cannabis gardens have to be 1,000 feet from any school or park. And then people sometimes worry about odor, although it wasn't that big a deal in the poll. And there have been some hyperbolic stories about odor and the problems. Generally, these plants do not have odor other than a short period of time in the late summer and fall. Not all strains do. Many strains aren't very odoriferous, if you will. But we are saying that any garden has to be at least 500 feet from a residence on an adjacent property, so your neighbors don't have to have the garden right next to their bedroom window.
Very good. We're talking with Eric Sklar from Napa Valley Cannabis Association and Alicia Rose from Herba Buena. And the topic is this poll that the Cannabis Association sponsored or had produced, talking about local voters' attitudes toward commercial cannabis activities. And overwhelmingly, people are not seeing a problem with legalization and are not seeing a problem with there being cultivation or retail sale. That's in your poll as well, right?
Yep.
We'll talk more about that when we come back. Time for a little break here. Some news on the way at the top of the hour and more to come here on Wine Country Live. It's time now to get back into our conversation. We're talking about a recent poll conducted by the Napa Valley Cannabis Association, and it tells us that local voters' opinions about cultivation and retail sale of cannabis are pretty much in line with what Prop 64 told us a couple of years ago. And I would guess around the state you probably wouldn't find terribly different results from this. With us in the studio, Eric Sklar from the association and Alicia Rose, who's also on a part of that association. And Alicia represents Herba Buena, which is a cannabis company as well. So the one of the ideas when legalization started being proposed in other states, Colorado, significantly, and of course here, was that take the product off the black market, get it into a mainstream, regulated, managed, get rid of the illegal grows, and then also the tax revenue aspect. Now, in some stories, we're hearing certain places tax revenue is not what they expected, which is part of the story. But in your proposal and your ideas here, what does the analysis show as tax revenue benefit to local municipalities and the county?
Right. We would support and voter support by 81% having a local tax on cannabis. It should be reasonable because if you tax too high, it actually strengthens the black market as people choose cheaper over safer, unfortunately. So a reasonable tax that generates revenue that we would hope the supervisors would use for administering the program, first and foremost, because we don't want to add additional cost to the county. And secondly, to educate youth about why they shouldn't be using cannabis. Our association will be spending money on that and effort, and we'll be doing educational events around the county throughout the process once we get this legalized. We think that that's where the effort and money should go. But it is clear that if you overtax cannabis, then it helps the black market. And the whole goal here is to eliminate the black market. The black market is not good for anybody. It's not good for kids because it contaminated cannabis. Same for adults. It's not good for the environment because these illegal grows tend to pollute and damage waterways. And it's not good because you're not collecting any tax money on it. So we support a reasonable, sensible tax and would encourage the Board of Supervisors to discuss with us what that might be.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is working in other communities? What do you think appropriate tax levels are?
I think Santa Rosa is leading the charge with what I would consider to be reasonable taxation on various types of cannabis business, cultivation, manufacturing, processing, distribution, across the board. They're somewhere between 2-3%, which I think is very reasonable. The cannabis industry is, despite common belief right now, a very difficult place to actually make money in because it is such an expensive proposition to actually get the licensing and go through, all of the steps that it takes to actually become a licensed cannabis business in California. And Eric is exactly right. We've seen counties where the taxes have been outrageous, like Oakland, and it's actually inhibiting the legal market, which is not what we want to do.
Right. And then for cultivation, you know, a tax of $1 a square foot for outdoor, maybe $2 for greenhouse seems reasonable. That's what Lake County did. And they seem to be getting a lot of applications for licenses. And there were a lot of illegal grows up there. And a lot of the folks who were doing it for a long time are now, because the taxes are reasonable, because the process allows you to get certified by the county and then by the state, are moving out of the black market into the legal market, which is just better for everybody.
I would assume it would be difficult to project revenue because you don't know how many acres would end up being cultivated.
Exactly. Right. It's very hard to predict that number now.
Yeah. Does this proposal going forward include processing facilities, and would those processing facilities be in ag watershed areas and ag preserve areas potentially?
Yeah, they would be. So it would be a processing building. We're limiting the size that goes with a garden without any kind of, you know, extensive permit to 2,500 square feet. And it has to be adjacent to the garden so that it's used just for processing. It can only be used for cannabis processing seasonally and farm equipment storage during the off season. It can't be used for tasting rooms. We're not going to address that at this point. We think that that's a battle that's for another day. And mm-hmm. And it's not part of our current plan.
Right. There's nothing here talking about dispensaries. You're not really into talking about dispensaries.
Well, the county doesn't really have, as we know, enough right. Areas that have the commercial licensing available. So although Ryan Gregory and a few of the other supervisors have been really supportive of the idea that if the local cities are not willing to step up to provide these locations for people to get their cannabis, then they would be forced to put something into the county. You know, there are locations within the county where that might happen, and certainly the processing and distribution is an important component of this, and so we'll see how that rolls out.
Mm-hmm. Right. We would suggest that the distribution and manufacturing go at the airport industrial area, so that's an appropriate place for it. And as Alicia said, there are about 25 commercial locations scattered throughout the county. We just didn't think now was the time to have that discussion. If the supervisors want to do that, we would support it, but we're going to put the pressure on the cities to start allowing recreational adult use dispensaries in a number that's proportionate to our population so it can service them. Otherwise, those folks are driving to Santa Rosa and Vallejo, which is not green, and it's not convenient. A lot of elderly folks particularly want to see these products as their medicine, and to make them drive 35, 40 minutes over that tough road over to Santa Rosa or down to Vallejo is just not right.
It's happening a lot. I still hear about it. You know, mm-hmm. We do thankfully have our first dispensary open here in the city of Napa, but because it is medical, so many people are still driving outside of the city to get their cannabis.
Mm-hmm. Right. And our company, in partnership with Ease, as we talked about on the air here before, Barry, is delivering all over the county. And that's great. If people want to deliver just like they like Amazon, that's great. That's one option. But also, as we've talked about, this is a complicated product. It comes in all kinds of different forms and strengths, and every strain is different in terms of the effect on a given individual. A lot of people really need a dispensary where they can go in and talk to somebody behind the counter who's an expert in cannabis and help them figure out what's right for them, particularly on the medicinal side, but even on the recreational side. You don't want something too strong, you want something that's just right for you. And so we need dispensaries with expertise that can help people understand this product and service them well. And that's what the people are saying they want. So we'd like the cities as well to get on the bandwagon here and start opening recreational adult use dispensaries in the cities.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What's the reaction to that, Alicia, when that comes up with cities?
They continue to say that they're going to take it slow, and Napa has legalized medical, and let's see how they're going to go with that. And I just don't think that it's enough. You know, it's people that live in Calistoga having to drive to Santa Rosa or, you know, to downtown Napa makes no sense. You know, being from the wine industry and sort of operating at what would be considered sort of the upper echelon of the market within my own cannabis business, I cannot tell you the number of calls that I am still getting every single week from concierges and tour drivers and, you know, you name it, folks that are responsible as the first contact with the, you know, millions of tourists that are coming here. They all show up in Napa and they're like, where's the cannabis? It is clear that adults want to be able to incorporate cannabis in a number of different ways to elevate their experience on vacation and just for daily life. And we don't have what it takes to service our own community, much less the, you know, an increasing every single year tourism market. So being able to have more access to what I would consider the upper echelon of products in a place like Napa makes an extraordinary amount of sense.
Right. And, you know, there is this kind of reefer madness fear of the politicians have, but the people aren't afraid of it. They want it. And You know, what would it be like if there were five cannabis stores in all of Napa? I don't know how many retail establishments we have. You know, it won't even be noticeable. And they ought to put them where retail goes. They've only allowed them in industrial parks and medical office buildings. The whole idea of zoning is to put like businesses near each other, because then the infrastructure, the traffic patterns, the parking are right for that. So industrial has big, giant parking lots for semis, right? And not a lot, and they keep the cars separate so that the cars don't have conflicts with semis. Retail has big parking lots for lots of cars that are organized with lots of arrows and, you know, and the whole thing, and stripes for the cars, handicap parking, you know, near each retail store so disabled people have an easier time getting into them. I have no idea what the Napa Valley City Council was thinking about putting retail in industrial parks. It just doesn't make any sense. In the Up Valley cities, I understand why in Calistoga, Yountville, St. Helena, they don't want to see 20 stores because they don't have that much retail. Right. But allowing one, two, or three, where there's vacancies right now in all three of those towns, particularly in St. Helena and in Calistoga. Additionally, St. Helena, where I live, has, I don't know, you know, five nail salons. It has eight art galleries, four women's shoe stores, you know, a cannabis store, too, is going to be a good part of the mix.
Only five nail salons?
Exactly.
How do people survive in that? It is a little odd. We're talking about this off the air. There's this old way of thinking, and for a lot of people, the old way of thinking, the reefer madness model, had a lot of hypocrisy in it. If you were in a public environment and somebody brought up smoking weed, you'd have to say, well, I might have tried that when I was young. Where today you're able to say, yeah, I do use it. And the stigma is fading, but there's this, I don't know, latency, I guess you could say, for people in politics, particularly in certain walks of life, who are just afraid that they're opening the door to something, and yet it's been present in the society for 100 years.
Thousands.
Well, yeah, in this society,
yes.
We don't. I don't know about. Someday we'll do a segment on marijuana history, perhaps. It's a weird way we have of holding these two conflicting thoughts in our mind, and you must run into this all the time as you have conversations.
Indeed, and having been doing this for 4 years now, it's amazing to see how quickly the consumer mindset has transformed, and people that wouldn't even admit to me that they used cannabis a year ago are out in the open asking me questions, finding out how they can get some for their friends, and really digging into the more of the nuances of how this medicine can actually help them within their daily lives to show up as more joyful, more present, with less pain, better sleep, all of these incredible things. It's so much not about just getting high anymore, although people can do that too, and that's wonderful, for the same reason that we drink alcohol. And yet, you know, cannabis has such, you know, better therapeutic value overall than something like coming home and drinking your bottle of Chardonnay. Not that I think the two compete. I think they actually, used to be able to do consumption events where we would have, you know, a 100-point winemaker show up with an incredible chef and actually start to do food and wine and cannabis pairings. It was really an extraordinary event series that we put on, and I think really highlighted the fact that these two things marry very well. They're not competing against each other in any way.
Where were you able to do those kind of events?
On private locations, under the medical collective. If you were a member of our medical collective, you were within your right to come and experience.
Mm-hmm. I've heard some things about a sort of resort environment in Mendocino. There's at least one location like that?
Yeah, right? There's, you know, everybody's sort of talking about how do we invite people in to sort of continue to enlighten and educate about this plant and its extraordinary therapeutic value for so many different things. And so, you know, it's top of mind for everyone. How do we create tasting rooms? How do we create experiential destinations? And in fact, you know, again, I can't believe how many times I have to keep saying this. Because I can't do it in Napa, I've been forced to, you know, move to other counties to conduct my business. And, you know, we've just been approved for an 8,400 square foot, cannabis lifestyle experiential retail destination where, you know, I know that it's going to be tourism focused. And, you know, unfortunately, we're going to be pulling tourists away from Napa because people want this experience. And it's not something that we're going to be able to give them here for the foreseeable future. Although I really hope that, you know, that changes quickly.
Yeah, on the political side of things, Barry, you know, I've been pretty immersed in politics here in the Valley for a while. I was a council member and a planning commissioner. One observation I have is that we're, you know, as we all know, we're in this very contentious political time right now, and that's trickled down to local politics. And what I've observed at the supervisor level and at the council levels in a bunch of the cities the last 2 or 3 years is that they've been unwilling to take a stand because of very controversial issues like Measure C. Fortunately, now finally, the supervisors are starting to actually take action on the issues raised by Measure C and in a hope to avoid the future conflict. They, I think, feel that this is going to be somehow a big contentious issue. This is not going to be a 51-49 thing like Measure C. This is going to be a 65-70%-30 issue. So I think maybe they've been infected a little bit by their experience in the past couple years, but maybe they're coming out of that now. And again, we'd like to see them in the next couple weeks put it on their agenda and start addressing this. Otherwise, we're going to put it on the ballot. Timing requires that we submit by early March for next March, for March 2020 election. So we're going to submit a ballot initiative. It would be very easy when we do that in about 2 or 3 weeks for the supervisors to take that ordinance that we're proposing, use it as a starting point for a process. We're in, you know, 8 to 12 weeks. They could put an ordinance in place and they can adjust it. We'll compromise. We will work with them on things that they care about. If we do it by initiative, we don't know what they want. We don't know what the rest of the public wants other than we've learned from the polls. So we're going to do our best to craft it the way we think is right. But I don't think we're the smartest people on the earth. I think that a public process, which I believe in, is the best way to craft an ordinance.
Absolutely. And, you know, the fact that a lot of us have been conducting business and part of this transition to create ordinances and regulations in a number of other counties, you know, I personally can say I've been through a lot of learning experience in that process. And, you know, they have resources here, like Eric and myself and a number of other folks on our board that they can go to ask questions. How did this work? What went wrong? What went right? What would you do differently? And so I think that's an extraordinary thing. You know, it's not about having to wait anymore. You know, I think we have enough information from our neighbors and from our own experiences and certainly from the support of the community to move forward and make adjustments as we go.
The survey we've been talking about has a dateline yesterday, February 12th. Has this been in any other media yet locally?
Not yet. I expect it'll be in the print media soon, but yeah. you were the first one to
breaking news here on Wine Country Live. So my point in asking that is that people will want to read these numbers for themselves. As I said, it's hard to digest numbers on a radio show. So you expect it will be in local media in printed form? If not, is it going to be available on a website or anywhere?
We haven't posted on the website, but we certainly will do that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that gives people a chance to – and I know from my own perspective, anytime somebody puts out a poll, I pick at it. I pick at the methodology and how many respondents. Mm-hmm. I want to know whether it's valid or not. So a lot of people do that.
And they could email us at info at the Napa Valley Cannabis Association, and we would happily email it to them as well if they really want to see the fullest, you know, presentation of it. It's a pretty big document to – you know, to downloads, but so people who want it, we'd be happy to make it available. Great point.
So I guess maybe my last question is, do you think this method of applying some pressure to the Board of Supervisors is going to work?
I just don't know. You know, it's really hard to say. We did the courtesy of showing it to all the supervisors on Monday before it was released so they could look at it and make sure they had answers ready if they wanted to or were questioned about it. And I couldn't get a read on whether they're going to do it or not. So I think we'll have to see after a week or two of press on this and we go to the supervisors meeting in a public forum, ask them to. I just don't know. I mean, I couldn't even begin to put a percentage chance that they will actually take it up.
Yeah. All right. Any final thought?
Thank you for continuing to make this discussion available to our community. It's an important one.
Yeah, thanks, Barry. Sure. Really appreciate it.
Okay. Eric Sklar from the Napa Valley Cannabis Association, along with Alicia Rose. Thanks for being here. At a break now, we're heading toward some news, and more of the show is on the way.